And man, isn't that an exciting way to start the show? So for those who are listening to the audio version, Rob was headbanging while the theme music was playing and kicking in. And what was the theme music for? It was for the Lean Into Art show, the show where two visual storytellers get together and try to walk around a couple difficult ideas, maybe try to hit a couple curveballs, take on a topic, go 1,000 feet up, then go on the ground with a few useful, stupid, helpy tips, and then a takeaway, and then we go home back to our art studios to make some stuff. Hi, I'm Jersey Drozd.
Hey, Jersey. That's a great recipe. That's a recipe for greatness, or at least something.
The recipe for creative challenges. So, hey, Rob, and, you know, we always start the show off with a curveball, which is we try to come up with a difficult question for the other person to try to take a swing at, and the goal is to get the other person to say, you know, and I have to watch them kind of crunch on it a little bit. Or, in my case, use words endlessly to waffle around the idea and then conclude by saying, did I say something there? So who wants to go first, Rob? Do you want to go
first? It's more like a machine gun. You get out this arsenal, like the Matrix in the back of your mind, where you're like, we need guns, lots of them, except they're all...
Still there, Rob?
The whole room, basically.
My rhetoric style is that of a Tommy gun. Lots and lots of bullets, but very, very few of them actually hit their mark. So and they're outmoded.
Thankfully, they're mind bullets.
What's that?
And thankfully, they're mind bullets. So
mind bullets. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. So who wants to go first with the curveball this week, Rob? You had something already? Sort of speaking of gun metaphors, you were locked and loaded with something.
Let's see. Well, actually, I have never ever shot a gun, by the way, but I don't know how I never did, but just for the record, so you know, I'm using gun metaphors without the knowledge. So anyway, like when I do a sports metaphor, it's probably got some inaccuracy there.
You played sports at least. Yeah.
Oh yeah. 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 Absolutely. Okay. Lots of, yeah, totally. But not, I've never followed the professional angle of it all.
Okay.
Anyway.
No.
Yeah. Here's in trouble with those analogies.
The new segment of the show is something where we reveal something about ourselves. No, I am a guy who loves pretend violence. If you've read any of my comics, everything's blowing up. Everybody's falling all over the place. Knocking a bad guy into the sky and having him land on his butt is one of my favorite things in the world to draw. But yes, when I was a child, I went to camp, and one of the activities at camp was the rifle range with 22 caliber rifles. And I refused to use it. And the instructor, and when I refused, I mean, I didn't realize what I was doing. I didn't think I was like, you know, Rosa Parks or anything. It's just like, no, it's wrong. I don't want to mess with a gun. And the instructor, who was a very Northern Michigan kind of guy, turned to the rest of the boys and said, can you believe this? Drozd doesn't want to use a gun. And all the boys laugh. It was that typical scene, you know. But
yeah.
This is one of the few memories where I look back, I'm like, hey, that kid had some stones. Because I just said, well, because I think it's wrong. That's why, you know, and I didn't go like, okay, give it to me, you know.
Exactly. Anyway. You have shamed me.
I still felt bad. I still felt really embarrassed.
Oh, sure. You feel like a dork when an adult singles you out like that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, that's curveball.
All right, so curveball, I am super intrigued. Like, so before we hit record, you teased me that you had one, and I was like, uh-oh. And this one, we actually, so we started a earlier in the week when we attempted this recording that we've rescheduled, we actually we succeeded in capturing an audio only episode for our members only, which that's probably a bit of a tease because I probably shouldn't talk about it too much yet because we're going to be announcing it
but we're going to start doing some members only content. And when we say members only,
again.
And we don't mean that it's only for people who have purchased workshops, although they will be the first in line for this extra content. But we're also going to create a free method where people can opt into it. But it's not going to be in a public RSS feed. It's going to be for people who are already signed on to the mission. Right.
Yep.
So
yes,
we did talk about it on that, didn't we? Your curveball.
Exactly. So I thought we covered it pretty well there. And I thought, well, you know, that's I feel good. I mean, there's, I guarantee every time we talk about it, I would learn something more. It had, just to not totally tease everything, uh-huh. what the curveball had to do with is looking at seeking like teaching advice from Jersey regarding this. I'm doing a web design class for the Fair School at MCAD and Minneapolis College of Art and Design. Fair is the Fine Arts Interdisciplinary Resources High School in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we had a lot of interesting puzzles and opportunities on our second week of the course that I got to pick Jersey's brain about. So some technology things and all that. So it was cool. Doing some workarounds and
dealing with different kinds of learning types, learning styles.
Yep.
Yeah, different kinds of classroom management stuff. Ryan Estrada of RyanEstrada.com is in the chat on the YouTube feed. And he's asking, Rob, is there a flashing light in the room with you? Your screen is flashing red and blue like there's a police car in the room.
Yes.
You see it?
I actually am shackled right now. I'm not like engaged in like a buddy movie like escapade where I just need to record one more podcast before I go off to the Huskow. I have no idea. I'm squirrely tonight. I think what this is basically Jersey has great lighting, right? And so there's some kind, basically his lighting situation isn't triggering like some kind of autofocus challenge with the Google Talk. Doesn't look at his feed and try to color balance it constantly. Whereas mine, it's almost dim enough where it won't bother. And it's almost bright. And so it's on this edge between dim and bright. And I think it's just trying to color balance it. So,
so it's my fault is what you're saying.
No, I think you provide a clear contrast.
I was trying to get my fancy lighting in the shot. Yes, I actually invested in some studio lighting a while back for the very reason of doing shows on video, trying to get as good a looking video as possible. So yeah, got to get. We'll sell a few more workshops, and then Rob can afford to get the fancy studio lighting. but yeah, I got one of those photographer. What do they call those things? It's like a big square.
Floods?
Yeah, kind of, I guess. And it's got like a diffusion filter on it, and it's got like five light bulbs in it. So it's supposed to create natural daylight looking stuff. And all it really does is put this enormous glare on my head, which if folks are watching the video, you can see.
There is a specular highlight now that you mention it.
Spectacular highlight. So, okay, we got to get to curveball then. And so I got a curveball for you, Rob. I'm going to ask you to do something that I know you are uncomfortable doing, and that's what makes this a curveball. It's not so much of a difficult philosophical wondering, but more of a, what do you think's going to happen in the next couple of years? Because I've been hearing some interesting things going on in different tech punditry, and this is going to be our topic this week is toward a paperless art studio. Don't let the name fool you. We're going to talk about a lot of different kinds of digital technologies, not as a replacement for paper, but as an bolstering our paper workflow. So on the topic of technology, heard some scary stuff over the last couple of weeks, and I'm wondering if you could weigh in on it. Is FeedBurner going away? Are we going to lose FeedBurner? Everybody's starting to talk about FeedBurner's death rattle is upon us. And the part that scares me about this is I just finished pumping everything I got through FeedBurner feeds so I could be nice and mobile and move my sites around as much as I want. For those who don't know, FeedBurner is a service that Google has provided for a long time where you can take your site builds an RSS, like with whatever content management system you use, like if you have a Tumblr blog or a WordPress blog, and you can take that feed, assign it a FeedBurner feed, and then everybody who subscribes to your site's feed, like for instance, like a podcast like this, they subscribe to the FeedBurner feed, and if you decide to move your content management system from, say, Tumblr to WordPress or vice versa, nobody has to know, because all you have to do is just update the source feed in your FeedBurner control panel. So it's an immensely useful service. And people are talking about Google might be getting ready to get rid of it because they've gotten rid of certain aspects of FeedBurner. And then it led to some other speculative talk about the end of RSS, which also made me go, really? I need to talk to somebody who knows more about this stuff. And I see Rob shaking his head and kind of closing his eyes like, All right, now I'll hand it over to you, Rob. Is A, is FeedBurner going away? And B, is RSS going away?
Let's see. Technically, has any element of our civilization gone away that we haven't forgotten? Well, let's see. Things we move on or whatnot. And I don't blame people for thinking that and having a reaction to all this stuff, because clearly there was the evidence trail where people started to react to had to do with, well, okay, I think FeedBurner existed on its own for, I don't remember how long, but I think somewhere in the early 2000s, we could Wikipedia that, I'm sure, pretty quick. They were bought by Google somewhere around 2007, and then slowly but surely starved for features and capabilities. And now recently, they shut down the FeedBurner Twitter account, and they shut down, I think, the FeedBurner blog. And so there's really some pretty severe moves going on that's providing signs that maybe FeedBurner is getting shut down. But now I'm quoting, so this is a bit of hearsay. I believe Google has not explicitly said that FeedBurner is getting shut down. But they also haven't been clear and upfront and transparent about what's happening. Let's see, I'm trying to think of what is a service Google has shut down.
Buzz?
Yeah, they got rid of Buzz, but I don't know how big of an audience was really attached to Buzz. Mm-hmm. They've gone through, let's see, there's some different features here and there, and like Labs, right? Labs was a pretty wonderful thing they had woven throughout their ecosystem that is all but shut down. There was things that, there was some incredible feature for Google Spreadsheets where you could feed a cell by having it look up stuff and scrape a web page. So you could do some pretty neat like data crunching without having to write your own Python or something to go scrape a web page and then, dump it to a format to then import it to something. It's just, no, guess what? Go fetch this and keep going. There's still some awesome features in Google Spreadsheets, but that was a big one. And they just got rid of it. They've been on a kick for a while. Anyway, whatever. I'm going off on it. There is evidence. They changed, like for me, they changed their whole pricing scheme for Google App Engine, and that made it so it became a very expensive platform for me to host my webcomic, right? So I migrated. I mean, they're known for just sort of seemingly in a non-audience centric way, just turning in and going into a new direction. And who knows, they're big, they might stomp on you. You gotta be wary of the giant, whatever. So anyway, there's no clear evidence that it's for sure going away. It doesn't look good. It's not worth panicking about, but in my opinion, and after the reading I've done, I didn't actually kick off migrating yet, but I have thought about what I'm going to do, which for the most part is just point to straight RSS feeds on what I'm currently hosting. There's services that you can pay to get exactly or almost exactly what FeedBurner does as a service. There's ways where you could choose to, if you really needed their robust caching and you wanted to avoid bandwidth fees because you get your RSS downloaded so much, there's ways to cache that on Amazon S3 and whatever. So, you can work around it. Or just give up that feature. For us, a lot of our things are hosted on Squarespace with Lean Into Art. A lot of my other stuff is hosted on Squarespace. They have analytics for RSS, and they have for their non-lowest accounts, unlimited bandwidth and all that stuff. So not worried about it. the other feature that's going away of for FeedBurner is that it automatically wraps your feed and the enclosures, so it's very consumable by iTunes, because of course iTunes, they have their own extensions and stuff they added to RSS. They sort of said, well, if you want to live in the land of heavily searched podcasts, where we put patio. There was a podcast portal that iTunes just basically squished.
I don't remember.
Rodeo? I don't know.
It was anyway, probably something like Podio, POD.io or something like that.
Yeah. Anyway, they right. So then you have those quirks of I've got to get this thing to work. But there's that's well documented if you're going to do it yourself, or if you're using Squarespace, you just click a button. You say, yeah, add that iTunes gunk to my RSS and let's move on. Then you can host it there. So then, is RSS going to go away? There are different kinds of consumers of RSS. There's you and I, right? Where we're like, yeah, I get my news this way. I get my podcast this way. Maybe some blogs are going to get rid of RSS, but I kind of doubt it. That would be a pretty big move. RSS at the very least helps the different machines that want to unify and present web content in a sane way, where it's about syndicating articles. So you have, however you put things on your site, the RSS is right. What stands for really simple syndication, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And now the things on your site, it's easy to go get a list based on the a reverse timeline of, hey, what's here and what's most recent, and some other things surrounding it. So why not? It's too useful to just disappear because it serves a good mechanical backend need as well. So things that maybe things like... If there's an ongoing battle between people who are trying to fight for your eyeballs, where they integrate content for you, and maybe they curate it in a way like Flipboard or Google Plus or Facebook or Twitter, they are portals that they want to. They're the new NBC, CBS, what have you, the big broadcasting stations in the U.S. right? Or BBC, right? Wherever right. You're at. 3CP1 for SCTV people. So it's not going away. It's too useful. And people are panicking and it's no big deal.
Yeah, that's what I picked up on, was people who sounded very frightened about the whole situation.
I'll miss it too. It was convenient. But you know what? This is what happens, where we have to be wary that, hey, I've been... hanging out in the Giants' backyard and they just chose to go run around and play Frisbee, and I better move.
Well, you assuaged some of my fears at the very least, but I guess I better go through all the trouble of disconnecting all my FeedBurner feeds all over again.
In a panic? It's good to have your, what do the zombie folks call it? Your jet bag or your...
I've not heard that term. You mean
it's like a bag for, escaping?
Yeah, like your end of the world bag kind of thing.
Exactly. Anyway. Yeah. Prepare your feed burner bag.
We got 100 zillion sites. This is another reminder to me that I got to pare down all the different websites and just go down to one. So concludes the curveball. Now, I want to take this opportunity as we close out this segment to say to everybody, if anybody has a curveball they want to throw at us and watch us both go, you can email us at leanintoart@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at leanintoart on Twitter, and or just, go to our regular Twitter feeds if you got a question for one of us specifically, like, for instance, that RSS feed burner question. If you would have lobbed it at me, I'd go, I don't know. Do you know? So... that's one that was really, Rob could best handle. Rob pinch hit on that one, to use a baseball term. So yeah, leanintoart@gmail.com. And with that, I'm going to say that it's time to kick in the afterburners and go 1,000 feet up for today's topic. And we're going to talk about toward a paperless art studio, which is a phrase that I borrowed from someplace else. Toward a paperless office, is that the phrasing? And I don't even know where that came from. Is that from the title of a book or something, Rob? I don't even know.
Oh, paperless office?
Yeah.
Let's see. I think I've been meaning to pick it up. Let's see. But David Sparks of the Mac Power Users podcast, he's recently put out an iBook called Paperless. I think he has a PDF of it too, but the iBook has, it's like, I hear it's huge. It's like 1 gig. It's got a bunch of video embedded in it and stuff. And that's like strategies for, in general, shedding paper.
Ah, yep. Okay. Adding it to the links. Oh my gosh, Rob, you added a lot of notes to the outline here. How are we going to get through all this? Holy free holies. Okay. So David Sparks.
I'm full of beans.
Well, I'm just going to sit back and let you talk. Holy crud. I'm looking at this Google Doc and it's outrageous how much stuff you added to this. All right. So let me just frame it up and then I can just kick the ball back over to you and let you, you know, run this show. This topic occurred to me recently because I got this new job. I don't even know. Did I talk about this on the show? I got this new gig where I'm the artist in residence for a special program at the University of Michigan. I know I told you about it, Rob, but I can't remember.
Yeah, I think, you know, it might have been one of those where I think you were maybe holding back because maybe I looked like I had the parade look in my eyes. I was like, I'm ready to throw a parade. Go ahead. And then you were like, yeah, I'm in like artist in residency, et cetera.
Yeah.
No. So, So tell us, what is this program?
Oh, I don't want to go into it's not important that I go into details. It's just that I get to go to, I have another studio set up now. So the University of Michigan, the specific program, the Lloyd Hall residency program, set me up with an art studio and asked me to come in for X amount of hours a week to do the work that I normally do. So, and the idea is to give the students access to me, right? That's what an artist in residency typically does. They work on site and then people can watch them work and learn more about their process. And then usually the artist in residence does a few programs of some sort, talks, presentations, or workshops.
That is super cool. So you're like Mr. Miyagi, totally, right? I mean, so you sit there and you got your bonsai trees and
if Mr. Miyagi and Pee Wee Herman and Kermit the Frog all got together and had a kid, that would be kind of what it would be like to see me at work. But anyway, so it's cool and everything, and it's really exciting, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity and so on. But this means that after almost 8 years of working out of, well, actually my home studio, I've always had a home studio since I was like 15. I've had an art desk in my own setup in my own area to do my comic stuff, right? This is the first time, and I've looked forward for, I've always fantasized about the idea of having an office off-site that I would go into, because it would require me to get cleaned up early in the morning instead of like kind of rolling into the shower at noon when after I've worked for a couple hours or anything, you know. And I thought, oh, it would completely change my outlook on my work. And
5 p.m. the 5 p.m. I'm ashamed I haven't showered shower was my specialty.
And the whole time you're just showering, you're just like, oh, I'm a terrible human being.
What time is it?
Yeah, yeah. So mm-hmm. Anyway, so, but what, after, I've been doing this for, you know, actually going to my new office for about a week now. And one of the things that happened as a result of this is I found out that it became necessary for me to be more mobile in my work because I don't have enough equipment to split over two sites. Now they're providing me with a computer and a scanner, but you know, they're not providing me with a Wacom tablet. They're not providing me with all of the art tools that I use. I've got one set of triangles, one set of straight edges, you know, and then also I've got my files, my digital files that I work on, right? Because like half of my workload is digital now. So it occurred to me that, wow, I got to really think about how I configure my Dropbox and my Box accounts and, you know, maybe even look into Google Drive and Microsoft SkyDrive as options to sync my files across multiple machines so I can just at a glance just pick it up and start working on it wherever I am. That mobility thing became a lot more important to me than it previously was. And I already had a lot of focus on mobility. That's why I got that goofy Samsung Galaxy Note tablet, was to, you know, take advantage of that mobility. But now I have to be a lot more careful and considerate about it because I'm working part-time off-site, part-time on-site, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this paperless office thing, this paperless studio thing became something that was much more interesting to me, and how much stuff we do digitally became very interesting to me. For the 1,000-foot-up theoretical part of the discussion, this is the first thought that I wanted to lob at you, Rob, and then see where you take it, is as here I am with this, you know, nutty Samsung Galaxy Note, $500. And yesterday I was in my new office and I was working on a freelance job that I realized I show up at my office and I sit down and I brought my Wacom graphics tablet, but I forgot the darned stylus. I left it home. So what good is my Wacom to me, right? And I had this freelance gig where they wanted just a couple quick little edits. And then there would be the kind of thing where in Photoshop with the brush tool, it'd be trivial to make those changes. But with a mouse, suddenly you're looking at double or triple the amount of work that would be required to make these different edits, right? And it's not going to look as good because the lines aren't going to look as natural because I haven't worked with a mouse to draw in years. So open up the file in Dropbox, save it to the desktop, upload it to Adobe Creative Cloud, opened it up on this, which I carry with me everywhere, made the edits on this, re-uploaded it to the Adobe Creative Cloud, downloaded it to my desktop, sent it to the client. Boom, I was done. And that was one of those moments where I realized that, you know, I've been working digitally since 1994. Not exclusively, but I've been, you know, using Adobe products and computers and everything. And I remember that at that time, in order to introduce digital into your workflow, you had to buy a $2,000 or more desktop machine, right? You had to get yourself a Quadra or a Performa running OS 7, you know, with multitasking now. And then you're going to get a scanner, and that's going to be about $1,000, upwards of $20,000. But at the newspaper where I worked at the time, we had a big 11x17 scanner, which was a $20,000 scanner at the time. It was a pretty
holy
big,
moly.
Yeah. And it was a pretty big investment to
get. It was probably subcompact car size too, right?
Oh, it was easily the size of a mini fridge. Easily. It took up an entire desk. Like in the graphic design department where I worked, we all had, you know, standard sized office desks that we worked at. And there was one desk that became the scanning station because the scanner was so darn big. But anyway, so it dawned on me when I made that quick fix on my tablet and sent it to the client, I was like, wow, you know, $500 and I got like a virtually all-in-one solution, whereas, you know, just 16-something years ago, 18 years ago, I guess, 94, it would have required, you know, upwards of $3,000 to do the same thing, and you wouldn't be able to do the same thing as well. So for one, is that's where I wanted to kick it off, is that part of my interest in this topic is it's exciting, the time that we live in right now. It's just getting better and better, and it's getting easier and easier. And then also, I wanted to quickly address that, you know, where did I write this down? Oh, the pros and cons of digital for those, just to get these out of the way, you know, really fast. Yes, you know, the pros of paper. Paper is even cheaper than digital to this day, although digital is getting cheaper all the time. Digital requires power. You know, the first thing that one of the people at the University of Michigan said when they saw me working on this was, that is awesome. What happens if the power goes out? And I was like, well, yeah, that's where I break up my notepads. You know, and digital requires software and hardware. Yes. But one of the apps I want to talk about today was $3. So again, we're talking about cheap. And yeah, the bits want to be free argument. Can't sell digital as easily. Well, yeah. Okay. So we acknowledge those. We're not here to fight that fight. We're arguing about what are some of the interesting ways we can use digital and become more mobile. I'm sure Ryan Estrada can pipe in the chat too about this, because this is something that he has been working on for years as a world traveler, right? So anyway, anything else to throw on the theoretical end about this digital stuff, Rob?
Let's see. Well, I think some of it is what would our motivation be to do it? Mm-hmm. I mean, because there was probably a time, I mean, there's a time when we had to go way the heck out of our way to, if you want to have, if you need to have an asset to become digital, right? So in 1994, that's actually the year I started my first game development company. I was actually working on not on a Mac, right? I had experience on the Mac from the 80s, but you know, first whatever multimedia computer, it was a Tandy Sensation, right? So back when Radio Shack wasn't just the cell phone hut or whatever it is now. And it was that. And what was I had a Wacom tablet. It was the Z Wacom. It had 128 levels of pressure sensitivity. It was a parallel port device. Yeah. Serial port device. Yep. So
don't unplug it while the machine is on.
Oh my word. Yep. Did you set the IRQs correctly? Is that, you know, so a lot of things, I mean, you had to go out of your way. So think about, I'm just thinking about the motivation to do it. Right. And when, like nowadays, I don't think the motivation is as clear where it's like, I want to be more digital because I find romance in that path. I find it, the price is coming down enough and, or you may incidentally have technology that can be repurposed, right? Where perhaps you already have an iPad for some other reason, perhaps you already have an iPhone or whatever kind of smartphone for some reason. Mm-hmm. And then you realize that this other, you know, hat you want to wear, job, lifestyle choice, et cetera, it enables that as well, where all of a sudden you're like, well, I had it anyway. So it's, I just think the motivation thing, it's interesting. Like,
well,
why do we?
Yeah. You know, I'm teaching, I just started a new round of my graphic novel academy at the Ann Arbor Arts Center, and 12-year-old kids in there. And one of the kids told me how excited she was that, you know, this past birthday, she got a graphics tablet. She got a Wacom tablet. And I'm finding that it's a foregone conclusion amongst that age group that, well, if you want to draw comics, you have to have a Wacom tablet now. You know, and when I show them my original art, like occasionally I bring in like old artwork from the 90s that I did, you know, when I was hand lettering everything on the page. And I mean, and that's the weird thing is that, you know, there's like a growing number of artists who are actually going back to that because it has a look that, you know, it's really hard to get digitally. But they, you know, they're incredulous that, oh, you used to just draw everything on one sheet of paper, you know, like that's how we doodle. That's not how we make, right?
Sure. Misassociating the, well, that's not the serious kind because somehow this had a higher cost or whatever. Because, yeah, if you want to, you still could easily spend. I would say now if you wanted to be the big spender, it's not just about, you know, getting the giant scanner and the, you know, expensive slow computer. It's, I mean, you would probably be getting a sweet Cintiq, right? One of those wide format ones that like can sit in your lap and stand up. And
well, the big one, you can't, I mean, it's like 60 pounds. Yeah.
So, it looks so nice.
It looks awesome.
Yeah.
But, okay. But you know, that's the funny thing about the Cintiq, just as an aside real quick, is that, you know, I think about that. And the thing that's always stopped me from saving up for a Cintiq is the lack of mobility. It's like, well, you know, if I want to draw on the screen, I want to be able to take it with me too, because I want it to be both a sketchbook and my professional drawing tool, right?
Okay, so that's another interesting angle too about what you brought up in the theory section here is the, I think there's different kinds of mobility also. So for me, I have the 12-inch Cintiq. You know, it's a few years old. It's the, I forget the model of it, but 12WX or something.
Yeah, that anyway. Right.
And, I mean, it's sort of portable, you know, it's not as portable as just throwing in your, you know, like your laptop and a traditional Wacom tablet in a laptop, you know, or in a bag or in a backpack, mm-hmm. but it's close, you know, it's like a, yeah, it's close. I mean, it's portable technically. Yeah.
Okay. I can see that.
Or I had a ModBook for a while, which I did succeed in selling on eBay, which wasn't the most fun experience ever, but I succeeded. And that was pretty darn portable. That was highly portable, but it wasn't like as portable as like your tablet, right? Your tablet's getting closer to parity with being like almost fully nomadic versus like easy to jump to a different room, right?
Where, yeah, okay, that's a good way of putting it. Nomadic capabilities is what I'm after. And being able to jump to another room is, if I had like a 12-inch Cintiq. And plus, you know, that's another thing altogether is that, you know, this tablet doesn't have nearly the resolution that a Cintiq has. This has 1280 by 800, right? Whereas your Cintiq, I'm sure, is much more comparable to your actual desktop screen. What is a typical desktop screen nowadays? 1920 by 1200 or higher? Something like that.
I'm actually looking it up. I think it's actually pretty close.
I don't know if there's anything else to go into in the theoretical section because you got so many different resources.
Oh, like I have as many notes as you. I just got competitive and I added a bunch of notes.
You did. Oh my gosh.
Who knows? We won't get through it all. This is classic. I love this. We get all these notes and we'll get through a fraction of it.
Yeah.
And that's all right. Yeah, we do this because we care.
Okay. So without any other comments, I will go ahead and kick us over to, well, we got to go to ground. We got to hit the ground. With some tools, tips, practical things, things that you can actually use to add more digital to your workflow and use less paper in your workflow. And if you don't agree with it, having more digital in your workflow, then skip this part. Wait for the next episode. This is for the folks who actually want to use more digital in their stuff. So, okay, where do you want to start with that, Rob?
Let's see. So I'm curious. So when you got more and more into digital, what caused you to go deeper down that rabbit hole? Was it the along the lines of general passion and excitement for technology, or was it some pragmatic problem in your art that you wanted to solve?
I would say probably a little bit of both. I mean, it was partially it came along at a time when I was just starting to build up a backlog of pages, and I was starting to see on the horizon that, oh, storage for this stuff is going to be a problem someday. You know, when I have problems storing what little I've done so far, and I saw the fact that, oh, a CD, at the time CD burners were just starting to become commercially available for $800 or something like that. And I thought, oh man, how many pages could I fit on that, right? I could digitally archive my stuff forever. And then also, after playing around with Photoshop for my day job, the allure of being able to zoom in so much and go in closer than the human eye could go was too much to resist, right? The idea of being able to make my artwork, quote-unquote, perfect, you know, not that I ever did that, and I've since outgrown that concept, thank goodness, but at the time, that was a very, very attractive prospect, is that digital could help my work become perfect. And then also the flexibility. I mean, you know, we did an episode on lettering in Adobe Illustrator. I did a workshop on lettering in Adobe Illustrator for Lean Into Art. And after hand lettering my comics for several years, I realized that, oh, man, if I could just do this, because, like, I am messing around with, like, different fonts and things in Photoshop to make logos, or actually it was Cork Express at the time. I realized that, wow, this flexibility is great. I just click on this and I drag it and it moves over there. Oh, if I could only do that with word balloons. So yeah, flexibility, ease of editing, being able to quote unquote make it perfect, storing it, all those things were very, very attractive at the time. That's what made me dig deeper into it.
I just thought computers were awesome. That's pretty much it. And I'm like, if I can get more into using them somehow, this will work out.
I love me that there magic box does things for me.
I do. I'm seeing some mentions in the chat here. Like Ryan Estrada noted that the ModBook Pro launched today. That's very interesting. We should link to that in the show notes.
Whoa! I gotta look at this.
This was talked about for years now, and it was one of those things where I think they announced it about 6 months after I bought my ModBook, and I thought, oh man, you guys, dang
whoa.
It! And exactly, and it looked incredible back then. I can't even imagine what it's like now. I'm sure it's been iterated upon a bit.
512 levels of pressure sensitivity.
Oh, really? 512. That's the same as the regular ModBook.
Okay.
I know that everyone reacts to that. So here's my stance on the different levels of pressure sensitivity, literally 512, right?
Uh-huh.
Think about that as far as if it's well calibrated. Think about how many, put your hand on your desk and push it 512 different levels into your desk.
Check and checkmate, Rob. You win that one.
Everyone reacts to that. I'm sorry. So whatever. Yeah. I guess.
Well, no. I didn't realize I was lying. I'm guilty of doing that whole specs thing that guys do. Oh, it's terrible. Oh, this is good.
Now, let me tell you though. Like I went back and forth between my 12, the Cintiq here, mounted on an arm on my desk, and then that ModBook for about a year and a half. I had them both at the same time, and I just had a workflow where I had all my stuff in Dropbox and I would just go to whichever workstation made more sense. And you know, being a new dad and being able to rotate in and all that kind of different stuff, it really helped having a couple different workstations set up. But this, but what it felt like as far as I would go literally on the same comic page from using one thing that had, I believe 1,024 levels of pressure sensitivity, or is it 2,048? I'm forgetting, right? Basically the Cintiq has more levels of sensitivity, and what it felt like using a brush with a softer tip, and then I would go to the ModBook and it felt like it had a stiffer tip. That is the difference. It's like I just would just remap a little bit. Like it's like I picked up one brush versus a different one. I wonder if any other artists have run into that, or if you know, or if you just have to be in a weird situation where you literally have both two different things.
System supports dual display and video mirroring. Ugh. Simultaneously supports full native resolution of the built-in display and up to 2560 by 1600 pixels on an external display. Oy yay. Yeah. It's $3,500 though.
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah. I don't have that kind of money to drop
on.
That's
painful.
Yeah. Hey, so this is where I could say leanintoart.com/workshops, right? No, I'm kidding.
exactly. That is very interesting. And I thought it was a great machine. I just, in my current, you know, flow of my days and whatnot, I just wasn't getting the use out of it. And I do need to go more nomadic. So that's where I was looking to fund that operation by selling the ModBook. I still thought it was an awesome machine, is an awesome machine.
Oh, Ryan Estrada is making more interesting points about it though. He says, yeah, you know, it doesn't have any of the iPad type features that they promised before, like no pinching or punching or finger swiping, pen only. Oh, I do have to say that is nice on the Galaxy Note is that, it's got the pinch and everything. So pinch to zoom, draw a little bit, you know, or rather flick to zoom and pinch to unzoom or whatever. But yeah, it's all just done, you know, I'm drawing with one hand, you know, not having to like click any buttons on the side, not having to like hunt and peck for different menus. It is pretty nice. So that is one plus for the tablet.
It's, it's specialized for that mode of input, which is that's a different experience than something that's general purpose. But,
okay, we got to get through like some of these notes that you put together, okay, Rob.
Yes. Okay. So let's see. What should we do here? So we're thinking about what we can offer for folks that if you're going the digital path or you're already on it and you're looking for helpful capabilities. So let's hit. Let's go from mobile platforms to desktop. How about in that order?
Okay.
So let's talk about the iPad and then hit the Galaxy Note. How about that? So we switch it up because
you have an iPad.
Plenty of the Galaxy Note worship going on, and hopefully in a few weeks, should I achieve my goals that I've locked in front of my purchase. Once I get those out of the way, then maybe I'll have a Galaxy Note too. We'll see.
Well, we'll talk about the Note in a second. You talk about the iPad first because you actually have an iPad.
So the iPad, I've been using it for, since it came out, and it's actually here's what's funny. I'm sure a lot of you in the audience have already drawn with it, right? But here's what I think of when I draw with it. I think of it as it reminds me of drawing with a mouse because you have one level of pressure. And so it's not horribly unfamiliar when you think of it like that, and just, don't expect the same kind of things out of it as a tool. I find, obviously, Sketchbook is by Autodesk, right?
Yes.
That's been pretty awesome on every platform that exists, from tablet to desktop, and on iPads, no exception. An app for that I've mentioned before, but that's for bitmap art, but for vector art, I've tried a lot of different vector art apps, of which there's many. Like, if you need to manage a Visio file, you're not going to be doing so well with this, but I just launched it. So it's called Inkpad. Inkpad has a wonderful tool or setting for its pen that allows you to do that trick like you can do in Adobe Illustrator, where you can autofill shapes. And so you can essentially do Krishna Sadasivam's character drawing exercise by silhouettes to infinity. And it's a wonderful experience because you don't need pressure sensitivity for that. I go in here and it's called Inkpad.
It's an Android.
I've got many dozens of pieces of art that, I'll experiment with different styles, but commonly what I do is I do shapes, and I do that fill exercise thing. That's a cover of the presentation that I've never given yet. Rhyme of the Ancient Game Developer.
I only drew that in Inkpad.
Yeah. So yeah. And I've done a whole bunch of different kinds of, different art here, but
Is Inkpad a drawing app by nature? I mean, is that its primary feature?
It has a nice simplified UI. If you want to draw with splines, you can do that. If you want to, select and adjust, it's got a pretty simple tool palette that sits to the side there.
Yeah, your video is really blurry, Rob.
Sorry about that. Well, let's see. Yeah, it's got a very simple tool palette, and it's got a pretty good UI that I think it's pretty intuitive. The brush tool has the different settings on it where you can have it. Basically I set it to get rid of the lines for a shape, and I just have it fill.
The stroke.
Yeah. No color on the stroke, and then fill the shape with whatever. And, it's amazing for that.
What can you export the files as? Is it only proprietary, or can you actually export them?
No, SVG. So exactly. So, power to the open formats. You got SVG, you can do PNG, of course, too. Between those two, I want a t-shirt with those things on it.
SVG, I love PNG, those formats so and then Ogg Vorbis.
Ooh, too far. There's DJ. All right.
I'm going to start doing podcasts in Ogg Vorbis, man.
All right. I'll still listen, but I'm going to feel awkward. Let's see here.
But I'm curious, in this vector drawing app, can you also export in SVG? Can you open that up in vector editing tools like Illustrator?
Yeah, absolutely. So okay. even um, even in Adobe Illustrator. I commonly will, I save the, it integrates with Dropbox. So I save it to a Dropbox folder and then I'll open things up in Illustrator and then I can carry them forward into, you know, other work.
You know, I mean, it's like everybody talks about the hoverboard, jetpack, flying car kind of thing, but it's like Dropbox integration with digital drawing apps. That's my rocket pack moment right there. That is so nice when you're working on a tablet and you're just like, oh, just export this to Dropbox and then I'll just get it later.
It's incredible. For your workflow, you need some kind of, I have not experimented a lot with Adobe Cloud. I'm curious.
Oh, the Creative Cloud or
what Creative is it? Cloud.
Yeah.
But, other apps I think are really awesome on the iPad. If you just want to annotate an image, Sketch is good. If you want to, do a, collage kind of arrangement, you know, or where you're trying to, it's crashing. Mood board was typically what I use, but I keep trying to open stuff up and it crashes.
Wait a minute, run that by me again. What is it called?
Mood board.
Mood board.
Yeah, so not that you can see them, but there's a list of some projects I was working on. And like I did a whole bunch of character silhouettes and then I imported them into a mood board, which actually it's not opening. But so basically you just import your different photos and lay them out however you want and annotate them. It's another way to annotate things, but make collages and stuff.
Visual annotation.
Yep.
So mood board and Sketch. And Sketch, I mean, is integrated with another app we've talked about a lot on the show. That's Evernote.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So.
Yep. You want to do like quick editing of photos and whatnot and get some, you know, do some adjustment to colors and settings and whatnot. I use Photogene. Photogene. One word. Yeah.
Are these all in the notes?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're in there somewhere.
Page 6. Oh. Exactly. Okay. So anyway.
I can leave it at that.
Now, I'm trying to think about digital painting apps besides Sketchbook on the iPad that I goofed around with.
Procreate.
I never used that one.
Procreate's pretty good. I've got, let's see, got a, I don't know if you can see it, but I got a dragon in progress in Procreate.
Oh, wow. Is that all done with, hold on. So let me cameraman that. Your camera so we can actually look at it while I talk about it. Now, was that done with your finger or are you using a stylus?
It depends on the session, but yeah, both. I went from being heavily stylus dependent to all of a sudden, I don't need to see where I'm touching anymore. And I do not miss continuing lines. I don't know. It's some kind of spatial mapping thing that
muscle
finally clicked. Yeah. So
you're saying that you can actually get used to painting.
Yeah, you can. It surprised me when all of a sudden I was like, hey, crap, I don't think I need the brush anymore. But I still like to use it anyway, because it's nice if you're like eating, honestly. So if I'm making a painting during lunch, I'm not greasing up my iPad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Food. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what stylus are you using? I mean, that'd be another one to add.
I use the Adonit Jot.
Is that the one that has a little plastic disc on the end of it and sort of like the ball joint between the
pen
and the disc? Cool. I have not tried these out yet, and that was Adonit was the one who was making the quote unquote pressure sensitive stylus for the iPad.
Yeah, I mean that'd be wonderful if it comes out.
Yeah, I know. You're getting it out right now. So for folks who haven't seen it, it looks like a ballpoint pen, but imagine the ball in the end is like a little bit larger. Yeah, there we go.
So, and they protect it. Everyone's freaks out like, well, I can't carry that. I'm going to break it. And it comes with a highly protective little cap that screws on. So
your lower third is covering up the pen right now, Rob.
Oh, Jens, here you go. Jens, screw the,
there we go.
Try to get that little, see the disc in there.
Yeah. So yeah, it looks like a ballpoint pen, but on the end of the ballpoint, I'm describing this for folks in the audio too. Imagine the ballpoint is a little bit larger, like the size of like a BB. And then attached to that is a flat plastic circle that adheres to, or rather kind of like touches the surface of the tablet.
Yeah, and the circle floats because it's on, it is connected to a ball, right? Yeah. So it, I mean, it takes some getting used to, but it functions quite well. It's definitely my favorite stylus.
I was using one of those Pogo styluses, which is one of the many, many styli, I guess is the plural for stylus, where it just has like a little piece of sponge on the end, like plastic sponge kind of material.
Mm-hmm.
Which is narrower than using
capacitive.
Capacitive stylus. It's narrower than using my finger, but it still feels very imprecise. It feels like drawing with a sponge. So
yeah. And the texture of okay. So those are awesome because they're quiet. So if you're sitting, you know, next to someone who's resting or trying to sleep or whatever, when you're using the Adonit Jot, it's going tick, tick, tack, 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 tick, tick, tack, tack, as you're drawing on your iPad.
Gotcha.
There's no soft, squishy thing.
Right.
To mute. So
I've got something on that about the Galaxy Note in a minute that we'll talk about in terms of the noise levels. But okay. So is there any other ones that you got on your list?
A lot. I don't know. But those are the ones I use on a regular basis. Let's see. Yeah. I mean, I could probably, I use a lot of iPad apps. So that's as far as the core for actual visual art production. I mean, I use the heck out of other tools to do writing and whatnot as well. I enjoy using the, I use Dragon Naturally Speaking on my desktop, and I use it mobily as well.
This so Dragon has the dictation app. Yes.
Yep. Exactly. They have a Dragon Dictate app and they have a Dragon microphone app for iPad and for iOS basically. And the Dictate app lets you just, you know, capture dictation essentially. And, it works really well and it requires no training. So sometimes when I need to, you know, get some stuff done away from my desk,
You do this right, like in your office, you just sit there and talk to your computer.
Oh yeah. That's one thing I have to admit. I get self-conscious about that in office situations. So my dictation has dropped. Like I'll dictate on lunch if I go grab a bite and I'm hanging out in my car, but obviously not if I'm in a restaurant.
Yeah.
Or, I have an office as far at my day job and I I'm going to do dictation. I miss it. And, there's no reason.
No, I'm going to save this up for my takeaway is that, for the end coming up here shortly, but, working in an office takes some adjusting when you're used to working from home. Oh man. And I know, you know, this, I know, you know, you are painfully aware of this, but you know, having spent, you know, 10, 15 hours in an office again for the first time in years, whoa. That was a culture shock for me. Okay. So, you had a whole bunch of different, writing apps on here.
iThoughts HD. I love the heck out of that for writing outlines. I love to use outlines and, essentially iThoughts HD, you can write and think visually, and it has a great workflow as you're doing your outlining, because if you, it's got this essentially two macros that are wonderful. So you're working in a, I should pull it up quick. You're working in a mind map, right? But essentially it's just an outline, you just have a core topic and then some topics off of there and then some branching topics from there, et cetera. Who knows what it's going to open up by default here, but of course I use this so heavily.
It's going to open your dream journal.
Exactly. So, all right. Making one real quick. So yeah, it starts out with one node in the middle and then, you want to add something, you can tap on the screen, but, So let's say you're typing away and you want to add like a child node. You just hit spacebar three times. You want to add. And so all of a sudden now I can start typing in that child node. Let's see, I'm trying to find the angle for my iPad. There you go. And then if I wanted to, if I hit return three times, boom, there's a sibling to that one. So you just, you know, write something, space, 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 or enter, enter, enter. And all of a sudden you're just, boom, there's this bunch of ideas growing on the screen. And it's pretty awesome.
Cool.
You can take that, export it as OPML, sync up to Dropbox, go open that and continue to work in a different outlining tool if you so choose, or you can export it to text from either one of your desktop outlining tools or from iThoughts HD itself, of course. Because iThoughts HD will export to tons of formats. You can make a PNG, an HTML file, you can do Octopus. Some really... you can, exactly. You can podcast with it and do videos. It does let you do scribble annotation now too. So you can just and insert images and whatever. So you can do some wild stuff. But it's incredible. It's so worth its price.
How much is it?
I don't even know.
Okay.
If it were, yeah.
But it's a bargain at twice the price, as they
It's
say.
A bargain at twice the price of I don't know.
We try to be useful, lean into art.com. All right. Yep. So, that's a lot of apps that you threw out into the show notes there, and that'll be available at leanintoart.com if anybody wants to find out more about all these different apps, if you lost track of all the things that we're throwing at you guys today.
So, dude, you are like a leader of the tribe who's running out on the plains carrying their, being a nomadic artist with their Galaxy Note 10.1.
Galaxy Note 10.1.
And so when other members of the tribe look to you and say, what apps do I need?
Yeah, I've been testing out a whole bunch of them. And I don't know if this is presumptuous of me, but because I don't know personally or haven't heard from anybody else who has this darn thing yet, as far as cartoonists go.
No way, really?
Yeah, I've talked to a couple people who have said they're going to get it, but I haven't talked to anybody who actually has it yet. So I just kind of thought, well, it's probably be good mojo if I just shared whatever my experiments were on the darn thing, right? So as I'm playing with different applications, looking for the perfect combination of this and that, share that progress as I finish it. And I've come to the conclusion at the time of this recording that there are three main drawing apps that I'm very excited about, none of which are Photoshop Touch. That was the one I was most excited about when I got the thing. But I think that's the playing the familiarity card with the consumer. Because when I came to it, I was like, well, Photoshop, I know Photoshop. Oh, this works kind of like Photoshop, but with a mobile interface. And I'll give it to Adobe. The mobile interface for Photoshop Touch is nice. I mean, it's a rethinking of the way Photoshop works, and it actually feels more natural in a tablet environment using your fingers and a stylus. But the image quality, the image size, and the line quality that you get out of that thing, they just can't be compared to some of the other applications that I found. So I don't use it at all anymore except to do minor corrections to things. I don't do any drawing in it now.
Oh, wow.
And another problem is, and this is a warning to folks who are actually considering getting the Galaxy Note, Photoshop Touch does come installed on the thing, but that means that when Adobe runs updates to Photoshop Touch, you can't get them. You have to wait for Samsung to send you an over-the-air update of your operating system, which will come with Photoshop, or you have to wait for Adobe Photoshop. I forget what it is. Either Samsung has to do it or Photoshop has to send out a special different update to the application. So I'm one version behind now. Adobe Photoshop Touch has been revved, and they gave it a larger canvas size, which I'd love to have. But because right now it's limited to, I think, 2400 by 2400 pixels or something like that, which is small. But it's not too small. You can still do professional work on that. Just you have to do it in pieces. But I found this other application, which I may have talked about before, called Layer Paint. Now, Layer Paint, let's see if I can get this in the shot. It has a pretty interesting interface. Let me put my pen down for a second.
I've seen a Skeletor leg.
Yeah, I'm working on a Skeletor sketch in Layer Paint right now. Let's see if I can get this centered into the shot and see if I can actually move my fingers. Oh, here, let me use the camera.
Oh, wow. You're like a magician.
How's that?
Yeah, it looks really good, and I don't know how you were holding it and actually operating it, but
well, this thing is really freaking light. So the whole interface happens down here, but you've got layers. Let's see if I can touch the layer palette. There's the layer palette, and okay. Your layer palette works just like a Photoshop layer. You can control the opacity up here. You can create clipping layers. So if I want to change this line, the line colors on this layer without actually breaking into my color palette to pick more lines, but rather like draw all the lines in black and then do the color holds later. I could do that on a completely separate layer by setting a clipping layer above it. And then you got to shut off your, come on, there we go. Shut it off there. And then it's got pinch to zoom. Come on. If I can do it right.
Might be hitting it with your fingers on the bottom of the screen too and whatnot.
There we go. We got pinch to zoom and then two finger pinch to scroll.
Yep.
Nice and smooth.
Man, that looks good.
Fantastic line quality. The best line quality I've found out of any Android drawing app. So then I do like, you know, a couple different thumbnail sketches. Let's see if I can hardly see it. Let's see if I can turn on those layers turn on their opacity or turn up their opacity.
It looks really good. I mean, obviously. That's your skill being put into the app, but at the same time, the app seems to be up for the task.
So yeah, so then I just, you know, pencil on one layer and then turn the opacity down and then ink on another layer over top. You've got a variety of different tools that toggle from the tool right there, the tool mm-hmm. button, and you've got different brushes and eraser. You have a line tool to do, you know, fixed width lines, like for instance.
Oh, really?
Even drawing, yeah, you just probably can't see it very well. There we go. So you can do, architectural type of stuff if you need to, or fixed width stuff. There's a selection tool, paint bucket, move, eyedropper tool, zoom in, zoom out, and hand. And then all these things are toggleable from the bottom row. And then you have an option tool, and this is where you set your brush size. Oops, hold on. Let me get my brush tool. And this is where you set the brush size. Makes your brush different sizes. And then with the stylus, let's see if I can do some drawing on screen, has remarkable pressure sensitivity. It feels like it's taking full advantage. You see how smooth that is?
It's the pressure sensitivity on an actual tablet. I mean, it's so awesome.
Yeah, and I'm not in the right layer. Let me go to this layer. So, I got the, for corn's sake, there we go. So, it's so smooth and so, graceful. Like, there's no lag, And then plus, because you can set the pressure sensitivity so high, and you've got different brushes, of course. So, I tap on this, and I've got, an airbrush, a pencil, fade in, fade out. Fade in, fade out has like minor line correction to it. It works just like the brush tool, but you probably can't see it so good on this camera, but it does like a little bit of line correction the way it does in Adobe Flash and some other vector drawing apps.
Okay.
And then you can flip your image, in case you want to draw, like this is the old mirror trick. You don't know how the drawing's turning out, so you look at it in the mirror to see what's wrong with it, or if you just decide that you want it to be in a different orientation. You've got multiple undos, and then you got your standard color picker, just like in Photoshop, right? $3 for this app, and I am very, very impressed with the line quality on this thing. I'm a huge, huge fan of layer paint for actual drawing. Now, color.
So hold on a sec. Just put it in perspective. A license for Photoshop costs more than that device plus layer paint.
Yep.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt. Just
no, that's worth
a little perspective. My word.
That is definitely worth bringing up to put in perspective. Oh, I should also say that you can export the image. Let's see what my export settings are. Let's see. Oh, there's also on this thing pen calibration. So you can actually calibrate your S Pen to it. That's the only drawing app I found that actually has pen calibration.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
How do I...
That's the wonder, yet the challenge of Android is the Wild West aspect of it, right? Where it, with that, it's a different feeling ecosystem.
Okay, so there we go. You can share a PSD or share as an image file, a PNG file. So, you know, and then plus let's share PSD. And then because it's Android, this is one of the things I love about this platform is I can share with all of these services.
We're friends with everybody.
Yep.
Opposed to
do that again.
Subset. So
I can share with Google Drive, with Dropbox, via email, in Evernote, Facebook, Gmail, Google Plus, Instagram.
Does it really make a PNG though, too? By the way, or is it a JPEG?
It's a PNG.
Oh.
So, and I just
that's wow. Hmm.
Why do you say that?
No, it just makes my heart feel so, I don't know, light and fluffy.
Now, you can, unlike Photoshop Touch, you can do larger images on this. And I've done images as big as, I think, like 9 or 10 inches wide by about like 7 inches deep at 300 DPI that I imported into here. Like I did look like the scan of my pencils imported into here to do some digital inking.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the interesting thing. Now, one would expect that this thing with like 2 gigs of RAM and 16 gigabyte drive on it, it's not going to have the power to crunch through something like that, right? It's going to get, you'd have some lag, you're going to have some slowdown. The weird thing is that I have experienced very little in terms of actual drawing slowdown, but saving and exporting slowdown, that's where it happens. So when I save the file, it takes like twice to three times as much time to save the file. Whereas, and same with exporting the file, but the actual drawing, I didn't notice any kind of appreciable lag.
That's clever. That's probably, it's well engineered, obviously, because it probably, I mean, technically, do you have to deal with the entire, all the data of the image at the same time? No, I mean, they could be just streaming and utilizing and, you know, dealing with only a portion of the image. And so they wouldn't need all those resources. But when you save it, you have no choice, I would guess, right? I mean, that's the whole file.
So layer paint for line art drawing gets my highest recommendation. I love the app. I need to write the developer to make some, feature requests, and also just to thank him for all the hard work on that. Then the other one, and I talked about this before, was Papyrus. I think I showed you Papyrus before. Yeah. No.
Papyrus.
Yeah. As in, it's actually a note taking app.
Okay.
But it is, what the slag? Did I get rid of all my notes? Where's my notebook? Where's my notes? All notes. There we go. Yeah, so here's one I posted this one on Google Plus. This is another really speedy app that is really meant for note taking, but I was using it for sketching because it's vector.
Mm-hmm.
And there is virtually an unlimited canvas size. You don't change the canvas size. It adds more canvas as you need it. And then again, you can export.
Want that to be a trend so badly with apps. Ever since working with Prezi, I want infinite canvas. Don't fence me in.
Yeah. See, like, okay. So here we go. Like, here's my sketch of Captain Cat that I did just to test it out. And I'm going to zoom out. Zoom out. And I'm going to keep on. Let me do the cameraman on the screen so you can keep on seeing this. And I just keep on zooming out, you know, and I got all the canvas I need. That's nice. The fact that it's vector lines gives you a super, super crisp line, which you probably can't see all that well. But with this goofy little sketch, it looks like the kind of lines you get in Manga Studio when you use the vector inking tool. Now, because it's a note-taking app, it's not meant for art, so you can export as a PDF. Let's see. Can I export something else? Export
to PDF. Probably vector, though, if it's in PDF.
Yeah, which means you can open it up in Adobe Programs if you need to.
Yep.
No layers, no image import. So, you know, when I'm doing my Captain Cat sketch here and I got all those pencil lines underneath, I have to go in with the eraser tool and get rid of those lines. But because it's vector, it works kind of like how it does in Sketch. Right, where you just drag over part of it and then you can it'll select the whole piece, right?
Gotcha.
So let me see if I can do that real quick. I'm going to see if I can grab my eraser, or even there's a selection tool. So let's see if I can do this where you can actually see it. So.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Go ahead and just like part of this.
InkPad behaves a bit like that too when you are on the iPad for vector art. Although InkPad does have layers.
Grab that eraser tool again. See if I can do this where everybody can see. Grab.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Whoa. Okay.
See
yeah.
What I'm doing? And yeah. You're touching parts of the line that deletes the whole line, which can be a good thing or a bad thing depending on what you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Captain Cat lost an elbow there.
Right. But so instead of having to be really precise about erasing, I can just like tap on the parts that I want to get rid of and it just gets rid of those parts. So yeah. That one is called Papyrus. I'm really digging it.
Cool.
But it's not what I would call a full-fledged drawing app. I would use it as a sketching app. And the last one is Sketchbook Pro, which I just recently posted. I just recently posted a test that I did in Sketchbook Pro. This.
Oh, yeah.
Did a He-Man color test. So Sketchbook Pro, which is $5 in the Android store, does indeed have, it works with the Galaxy Note stylus. Mm-hmm. For pressure sensitivity. So,
oh, good.
Yeah, and it comes with a lot of really nice brushes that gives you all these really awesome textures. I don't even know if you can see this. You can look.
Oh,
on
yeah,
Google, on my Google Plus feed.
Looks very it. Painterly. It doesn't look as like shadows that are perfectly rigid.
Right.
Lines. Like there's more subtlety in the. Transition from color tone to color tone.
So Sketchbook Pro does have some issues, though. I have yet to figure out how to make the canvas size any bigger, and I was doing some reading that suggested that you can't make the canvas size bigger in the tablet version, but I'll have to look into that a little bit further. I've only been playing around with this just for a few days, but based on what I was able to pull off with the different brushes in there and with the pressure sensitivity, I'm thinking between Layer Paint and Sketchbook Pro, I might have a mobile solution for drawing digitally and then coloring digitally. Mm-hmm. And Sketchbook Pro can export to PSD. So let me go to my menu and go to, where is export? Where is the export note in here? Or button? You know, this will teach me to not look into this just before we started. Actually, I need to go to my gallery.
It's, I often, like, there's a couple of tasks, like, when it comes, all these different apps will do things a little bit differently, obviously. Like, they'll solve the export sync to Dropbox differently, or, you know, the exporting settings to different formats. I mean, there's always these quirks.
There we go.
Okay. Nice.
Export PNG, JPEG, PSD. And PSD. And I can export it to my SD card. Can I export it to someplace else? Boy, that'd be nice. But in any case, yeah, you can export it as a PSD, and it's simple. It's trivial to get it off of the SD card if you really need to. You know, that's another nice thing about Android. You just plug it into your Mac, and then it recognizes the SD card as a USB drive, which is kind of unique after being in the iOS ecosystem for so darn long.
Oh, yeah.
But those are the three ones that once I played with them, I was like, Photoshop, Touch, I don't even need you. You guys better, you know, get your head in the game, because Layer Paint is kicking your butt in terms of user experience. And then another one I was playing with that folks might want to try out, because there's a free version that you can download, and that's called Infinite Painter Free, which we'll have a link to in the show notes, which is another painting app, which user interface isn't quite as polished as Sketchbook Pro, but it's got an interesting user interface, and there's a lot of really cool brushes in there, too, to do some really interesting digital painting effects. So... those are the drawing apps that I'm really enjoying right now. Do you want to close with some different product, like, I don't want to say productivity apps, but apps that make the mobile platform more accessible everywhere we go, right?
Well, let's see. I want to just, I know we're going a little long, but I really wanted to at least do a flyby to acknowledge with enough emphasis of how much these things aren't mutually exclusive. Also, like I like the productivity apps too, like between digital and analog, essentially. Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I can keep it brief, right? Where,
okay.
So, okay. Yeah. Okay. I already said the surprise or whatever. There isn't surprise that these things aren't mutually exclusive. Last 24-hour comic book day, I did, let's see, where is that? Basically I take, it's Wausau. Was it 92 brightness, 8.5 by 11, 110 pound cardstock that I cut into, four. This is like a full sheet of it, whatever. But, I typically keep a stack of them near me, and I just use that as like a quick thumbnail format. And I use an analog pencil or whatever. Typically, you know, blue or red. Once in a while, I'll just use a normal graphite. And I find that like a really rapid way, faster than anything I can do on a screen, to just hurry up and brainstorm and get ideas down and solve the basic page layout problems. And then take a snapshot of it. Like I didn't have a scanner with me when I was, you know, just sitting at a desk at the, it's a place called Open Book in Minneapolis. And there's typically are sponsors of 24-hour comic day every year in the Twin Cities. And they're super awesome. But, you know, so I just had this stack of, 24 different, 4x5 cards with sketches after I had, had a basic idea of my story. And then I took photos of them with my camera. And what's funny is I think I was using my Nexus One camera at the time, cause it was just before I got the iPhone 4S, and it just synced my photos up. Right. So yeah, the iPhone 4S has iCloud now. Right. And you have your photo stream. Well, the Google was already doing that with syncing things up with, Picasa automatically. And, so essentially I just took the pictures, went to my machine, they were all there, and I dropped them into, Manga Studio, and they were my backgrounds that I then based the rest of the work on. And, I mean, there you go, digital and analog working hand in hand then. And, I find that my overall process is heavily bolstered when I'm willing to shift back and forth, and because I get the maximum best portability and productivity for my style when I go back and forth.
Yep.
So,
the other thing is that I love about that, and then that tied into the takeaway that I had prepared for today, which I don't know if we'll have time to go into, but this whole idea of you don't need the really big fancy thing in order to do your thing anymore, right? So you do, like, if I didn't have a scanner 5 years ago, I would have been paralyzed in that situation. How do I get this piece of paper onto my screen? I can't. But now, you know, you can take a picture of it with, because this thing, you know, my tablet has a 5-megapixel camera on it. That's going to take a good enough picture for me to work on off of a set of pencils to do digital inking on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's exciting. So, okay. Yeah. I wanted to go into, you know, we hinted earlier at this whole thing about Dropbox integration and how awesome that mm-hmm. is. And I know we've talked about these different storage options before, but one of the things that I think we're in a really, and I don't think this is going to last long. I think we're in this weird transition period where cloud storage services are all jockeying for position, which means that we have a ton of options right now. And mm-hmm. who knows if any of these will be around a couple of years from now. Although there's probably a few safe bets, right? Google Drive, probably going to be around for a while. Dropbox, yeah, they're probably going to be around for a couple more years. Dropbox, Box.com, Google Drive, Microsoft SkyDrive. Microsoft SkyDrive, I think you get, 3, 5, 7 gigs, something like that, just for signing up?
Yeah, they have different specials too and whatnot. I think it depends on your relationship with Microsoft. You may actually get more. I forget. I've seen promotions. It's been a while, but they're definitely giving out the space to different audiences to try to they're trying to build up their service and hit a critical mass where, right, you know, instead of assuming Dropbox, because they're the king right now. Yeah, wouldn't you say?
Oh yeah, they're almost like the Kleenex of cloud storage, right? I mean, it's becoming a verb. Where can I just Dropbox it to you? You know.
Yep.
So but the nice thing is all of these different services that I mentioned. So all these services, what are they? Just the really brief version. It's cloud storage. You know, you back up your files or put your files into this service, and then you can access them from any place. You got a digital terminal and your password, right? I have a Dropbox account that I use that I'm here on my desktop now. I can open up the file here, but then when I go onto campus to go to my new office, I can open up the file there, no problem. And I can open it up on my tablet. I can open it up on my phone if I need to. And the nice thing is that all of these different services now have desktop integration, where there's like a virtual folder on your desktop that you just drag things into. I mean, even Box has that now with Box Syncing, mm-hmm, where you can just, it's there in the sidebar of my Finder window, and then I can just drag files into it, and then boom, it syncs up on the cloud for me, and then I know I can get it at, you know, my remote office. The other thing I was playing around with, Rob, was remote desktop apps. Have you ever messed around with these?
Yeah, quite a bit over the years. Yep.
Do you find them useful? Because I'm just starting to play around with them.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. One thing I've found useful is... So if I haven't put something in my Dropbox folder, I can remote desktop into my home laptop or desktop, provided I remember to leave it on and all that, from my iPad or my iPhone.
Yeah. I was playing around with one on my Galaxy Note, and I got really excited when I started playing with it, because it's like, oh, there's my Mac desktop on my tablet. I'm opening up apps. I'm going to open up Manga Studio. Ah, no pressure sensitivity, because how awesome would that be able to use Manga Studio on my tablet? Then I would have a mod book. And especially when I was on my Wi-Fi network at home, you know, I'm just upstairs on the couch. I could draw in Manga Studio here and then save it downstairs. But yeah, no pressure sensitivity. But, you know, a really nice way to be able to access files if I forget to update something to the cloud, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, so you could do some tasks that would make... It would make a lot of sense for I could see editing a podcast possibly, or at least doing some of the final processing and posting, where I may not have all those tools on my iPad. One of the huge categories, especially in the past, was development environments. So if you're actually writing code there, it's been a slow progression to get really good coding environments on an iPad. Right now, I'll mention it. One app I use is Textastic. It is pretty awesome for HTML coding, CSS, JavaScript, Python, Markdown, stuff like that. Textastic.
But add to the show notes.
It's been a while though. Like that. I think it took about probably, I mean, a couple of years into the life cycle of the iPad before there was really decent options appearing. And so that was a great reason to remote desktop from an iPad is to go visit a full development environment, which I don't use as much anymore. I typically will use TextMate or Sublime Text too.
You know what? We might have a two-parter in this one, because I'm going through our notes and we had a whole section on digital asset management. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to go into that next time. So the paperless studio part two should be our next one, Rob. Because yeah, you got a lot of notes in here.
Oh my gosh, I had a whole anecdote too. Yeah.
Hang on to it for next time. That's our tease. Because it must be a good one if Rob's rolling his eyes like that. But yeah, we'll do that next time, because we're already at like an hour and a half on this one. So, and I don't want to risk running the Hangout longer than that because we ran into problems with this in the past.
Yeah, you're right. You are right.
Okay, well, we'll conclude by saying that, yes, we just proved that even on two simple platforms where the main device is $500 or less, that you have a lot of options in terms of how to work digitally. There's way more than that. Next time, we are going to talk about how we streamline our workflows a little bit by managing digital assets. This is one that I'm sure Ryan Estrada will have a lot to say about as well. This is something he's talked about on the Comics Are Great show in the past. And we need to talk with Ryan on our show sometime, probably about this topic as well. So with that, is it time to really briefly go to takeaways?
Yeah, definitely. I think you've had something you've been chewing on lately.
Oh,
haven't you?
I got to play the stinger. What do we learn? What do we think? What do we walk away with? What do we reflect upon after completing a week of life as a creative person? The drumbeat signals that it's time to be vigilant about this kind of thing. Be attentive and alert, and I can't think of any more adjectives. Funny enough, my takeaway this week is downgrading after talking all this tech stuff. I learned that, when we talked about the Galaxy Note when I first got it weeks ago, we talked about it on the show, right? Mm-hmm. And the topic of gadget lust came up. Like, oh, did you have gadget lust when you saw that thing? And I was like, well, it wasn't a lust for the tech as much as what it could do for me. That's the part that was exciting to me. Because let me tell you, the build quality on the Galaxy Note 10.1, if you're expecting iPad build quality, you're going to be sorely disappointed. I got a case for mine because it's flimsy plastic back, as I showed in the show before. But still, an awesome device. Just, you know, it was surprising to me that after holding an iPad and then holding this, I'm like, oh, you know, when you hold something that's made out of plastic instead of metal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I mean, there's not to insult it to this extent, but I mean, just like there's a difference in the toys that the toy surprise in cereal and then something that you would get off the shelf, right?
Yeah,
There's wait. I mean, it's not that extreme though, is it? I mean,
Well, it's enough that it worries me when I'm holding it because the plastic bends in so much and it doesn't feel like there's anything protecting that plastic from the boards inside.
Oh, geez.
So that part makes me nervous. As having spent, you know, $500 is not a trivial amount of money to me, right? It's like I don't make so much money that I'm like, oh, $500, I'll peel off a few hundreds for my friends. You know, it's a substantial amount of money. And with that kind of investment, I don't want anything to happen to this thing because it's not like I can just go to the Apple store and say, hey, genius, fix this thing, right?
Yeah.
So I did get a case for it. And once you put a case on it, and I just got like this cheapo, you know, plastic vinyl case with like a hard back to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fine now. I mean, because the front feels fantastic. The front of it with the glass and everything feels really high quality. The speakers are great. The software is, the hardware inside is robust. It's speedy as all heck. I love the performance of the thing. It's just that plastic back feels so flimsy. And I think it's partially because I've handled iPads before and they feel so solid. You know, you feel like you'd almost use it as a weapon. It's a weapons grade tablet. Whereas the Note feels a little bit more cheaply built, and perhaps they made like a build quality trade in exchange for the Wacom pressure sensitivity. And if that's the case, I say more power to you, you know, because that's why I bought it for was the Wacom pressure sensitivity. Anyway, so I downgraded. The Note was my first step outside of the Apple ecosystem, and I had my iPhone 4 for the last couple of years, and I just got sick and tired of paying such a high phone bill for a phone that I couldn't even use as a phone half the time because I don't get a signal in my basement with the phone. I had to sometimes I had to go stand outside on my patio in order to make a phone call because didn't have a signal in the house. Love the phone. Hated paying that much for phone service that didn't work. And I thought, well, gee, you know, I should just get a phone that I can treat as a phone and use the iPhone as an iPod Touch. And I got a 2-year-old cheap Android phone, and I got on that Ting service for like $20, $30 a month. So, you know, I cut my phone bill down to a huge degree, like, you know, a third of what it was almost. No, more than that. More than that. Or less than that, rather. It was, or I don't know. But it is a lot less.
It was by a large margin.
By a large margin, I cut my phone bill down. Yeah. And, you know, it was as somebody who's lived in the Apple ecosystem for a long time, it scared me to, you know, it's like, oh, now I'm going to have to manage this whole new software. And, you know, is it dangerous to run the software? Because it's not Apple, because Apple protects you, quote unquote. You know, I just realized after leaving it how much of the Kool-Aid I had been drinking all those years. But also,
because you had dinner with these people and you realize they're much like your people, right? We're all the same, you know? And, yeah.
But anyway, so, you know, it dawned on me that, you know, I made a decision about functionality over functionality first, right? Over style and build quality and form factor and all that stuff. Like, look, I was telling you when we weren't recording that my first criteria as I was researching phones was I needed to be a good phone. I don't care if it does great email. I don't care if it does high definition camera stuff. I just need this thing to work as a phone, so when I get a phone call, I can take it. So that was my decision making process, not about like, oh, how good is the screen? Because this thing has a plastic screen, which blew my mind after using an iPhone for so long. It's like I can push on it and it bends. It bends when I use it. I'm like, oh, I'm going to use multi-touch on this. But anyway, the takeaway that I had, the headline that I'm sort of burying with all this talk about phones is, you know, there are times, after all this talk about tech, that when, you know, you don't need the top-end fanciest thing in order to get the function that you want to get, right?
Yeah, that sounds, you know, pretty darn pragmatic. I mean, is there, so what happened? I mean, with your, did you lose the Apple glow? Or was there some kind of
I learned a greater appreciation for both, because after using a cheap crummy Android phone for a week and a half, when I picked up my iPhone again, I was like, oh, this does feel nice. This, I see why people get so, you know, breathless about these devices. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like I don't want to pay that much to be able to use the full functionality of the thing, right? The thing I'm thinking now is I may never buy an iPhone again and may just do the cheap smartphone on the cheap service and just get iPod touches if I want to upgrade, quote unquote. Because the only reason I even got the 4 was because I had the video capabilities and I wanted to do live streaming from the thing. And even that doesn't work all that great on it. So
yeah, it's interesting. Each of these ecosystems has such a severe trade-off. Before I became a Mac person, I was actually, I was on Ubuntu Linux for a while, and I still run, I've got a netbook that runs Ubuntu, and depending on I used it a ton for a few months because it worked with a client I had and whatever. I just brought my iPad and my netbook essentially, and that was my workstation for a while, and I, you know, did everything I needed to do. You looks like you have a question about that.
Seem surprised. No, I was listening.
Yeah. I mean, it was just a very functional workstation. And in fact, I mean, on the netbook, I had my Intuos 3 that I would carry with me, and I would use the GIMP when I needed to do pressure sensitive drawing.
See, I'm even thinking about doing some more of that. Well, I mean, I already had on my plate to start learning GIMP too, because that's another thing where I'm thinking about being locked into ecosystems, expensive ecosystems, and I'm becoming increasingly frustrated with the price to stay in the Adobe ecosystem. You know,
it's a high tax. I mean, and you know, not trying to just all of a sudden go totally against it, because yeah, I did actually go into the Apple ecosystem, and depending on what you want to do, like some of the jobs I've been, you know, clients I was going after and whatnot, and you know, like mid to late last year, I mean, some of the conversations, you know, we would talk about the Adobe ecosystem and the different Adobe tools. And yeah, I'm pro Adobe. I love a lot of aspects of their tools, but it's not a cheap ecosystem. And I like to see alternatives as well. Exactly. And so once you see and taste the alternatives, all of a sudden you have new perspective and new criteria to say, wait a minute, maybe I'm not going to upgrade photo, you know, the CS suite for a while because, you know, I've got it and it's really expensive.
No, that's what I was trying to say is like, you know, when you are evaluating other options, it is never to say that we need to burn down the previous option, right? It's not death to Adobe. It's just that, boy, you know, as I'm looking at all of, and this goes back to my takeaway, is that sometimes, you know, you don't, it's like some common advice that gets thrown out about making comics is, oh, all you need is a pencil and a piece of paper. And that's true. To a degree, you know, and where I, the yeah, but that I throw on top of that is, well, but if you want to draw like this guy, if you really enjoy what that guy does with his style or this gal does with her style, you have to look at what tools he or she is using, and you may have difficulty replicating that exact thing that you love about that other work without that tool, right? So it does, there is a buy-in at some point. Well, Ryan Estrada might disagree with me on this because this is a guy who works at ballpoint pens and does amazing things with it. But in any case, you know, for a lot of people, there's eventually going to be a buy-in of some sort. And that buy-in doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, because the counter argument to the whole all you need is a pencil and a piece of paper is here's what the professionals use. You're going to need this kind of brush. You're going to need this kind of ink, this kind of paper. You're going to need 300 series or 400 series Bristol preferably because 400 series accepts ink better than this kind of Bristol. You know, we've got a lot of options, and it's worth looking into those options and doing cost-benefit analysis. Go do some spreadsheeting like Rob Stenzinger in one of our previous episodes where we talked about spreadsheeting, which I will link to in the show notes, to evaluate your options and figure out what works best for you and make these choices deliberately. And sometimes it's okay to take a step back in technology, not for any kind of political statement, not to be like, oh, I'm Mr. Open Source, I'm waving a flag, but to say that, hey, you know, I've got costs and benefits to weigh here. And in my case, I realized that right on like the very week that the iPhone 5 came out and everybody's like, oh, iPhone 5, it's a, you know, a transcendent experience using this thing. There I was saying like, you know what? I'm on the iPhone 4 and I think I'm even going to take another step back because, this is too costly of a system to stay, just to keep participating in. Right. And I don't share this story to make any kind of political statement. I'm just sharing the story in the sense that the whole idea of a takeaway is, what did I learn? I learned that it's not so scary to take a step backwards sometimes when you're evaluating what the different costs and trade-offs are in using, you know, different tools in your work. So
that is super cool. I think we can get stuck in ruts where we make a lot of assumptions about the other options because of what we're currently familiar with.
Yep.
And yeah, there we should link to a Wikipedia page that I've been talking about almost all every conversation I get in lately. There's a, no, what is this one? Yeah, no, I think it's on there. It's a list of cognitive biases. One of them is sunk cost and logical fallacies. Those are two Wikipedia pages that are worth spending a lot of time on just for fun. Link the sunk cost fallacy, where we assume that what we've been doing it outweighs the value of other options because it's what you invested in and it's got to be better and or you have to justify investing in it and then yeah.
Well, put a link to that in the Google Docs so I can include it in the show notes, and then we've got to wrap this up, Rob. We've been going an hour and 40 now, heading on an hour and 45 minutes. So this was a long one, everybody. And if you stuck around to this far, that means that you probably really, really enjoy listening to this show, or you just left it on in the background while you're drawing. If that's the case, then I'm going to raise my voice right now in order to get your attention to say that this episode was brought to you by leanintoart.com/workshops. And we've got a workshop pick of the week. If you enjoyed this talk on digital illustration, and if you're looking forward to the talk we're going to do next week on using digital assets in our work, then you might want to check out Kim Holmes' workshop, Digitally Organic Art, at leanintoart.com/workshops. And what that is, it's an hour-long workshop where Kim shows you, Kim Holm, Denungaher Holm on the Twitters, cartoonarchy.com. You know, he's been around for a while. People are familiar with this guy's work. Pickman's Model, part of the anthology Satan is Alive, curated by Mark Rudolph of the Art and Story podcast. So, but yes, he does this fantastic workshop where he shows you how to do digital art that looks hand drawn, and he has all of these great assets that he links to that you can download for free and use in your artwork today. And that's at leanintoart.com/workshops. Check that out if you enjoyed this. And if you purchase the workshop, that Kim gets paid and then we get paid a little bit. It's a way to thank us for putting on this show every week, or give us a little pat in the back, show a little bit of support for this thing. If you don't want to buy anything, you can still support the show by going to iTunes, giving us a star review. You don't even have to write a review. You can just give us however many stars you think we deserve. And you can just go to iTunes and search for Lean Into Art or Rob Stenzinger. Or Jersey Drozd. So, with that said, hey, Rob, you're going to be at FallCon October. Oh, wait, that's coming up. That's like this weekend.
That's in a couple days. But thankfully, I have I've prepared. I'm ready now. So got my minis all printed up and folded and stapled, ready to go, ready to do sketching and hang out with other Minnesota artists and, you know, greet the folks and whatnot that come to FallCon. It's on the Minnesota State Fair grounds and the Education Building, I believe.
MidwestComicBook.com this weekend. Go check out Rob's comics and tell him how much you enjoy the Lean Into Art cast. And then October 26th through 28th, I'll be at DetroitFanFair.com. If you guys are going to be in Southeast Michigan towards the end of October, comic show, I'll be there leading workshops and doing sketches for kids. So, Rob, thank you for doing the show with me this week.
Thanks. My pleasure, Jersey. Thank you. It's a big topic. Guess we're going to have to come back to it.
Yeah, we're going to have to do a part two. Thanks, everybody who turned out for the live stream. Thanks for showing up on a non-scheduled day. Thanks to Ryan Estrada of RyanEstrada.com. John O'Ballier was here of Demophon.tumblr.com and Demophon on the Twitter.
Awesome. Twitters. That's right. Jono. Sweet.
Yeah, John was here. So, yeah, it was good seeing you guys in the chat. We do this every week, usually on Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern time. So we will see you guys hopefully then. That's on the Google Pluses. And we always put out a shout-out about it on Twitter. So you can either follow Rob on Twitter or me on Twitter to find out when the next show is streaming live. And until then, I have been Jersey Drozd of LeanIntoArt.com and Jersey on Twitter.
And I've been Rob Stenzinger, also of leanintoart.com, and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.